Hey, y'all. Welcome to the Marty Smith's America podcast. This is volume 100-something. And it's kind of a catch-up episode. I haven't even talked to Travis in 2 weeks. I don't know, 10 days, something like that. Since
we've sent a couple texts, but for the most part, you know, when you're at, you know, you were at the PGA Championship and then you're on vacation, I know what it's like at the golf event. So there's not a whole lot of time to chat. So yeah, it's been a while since we've, you know, downloaded anything.
Wild couple weeks, backing up to the Preakness and how we all had certain expectations, and then those expectations did not come to fruition. And just an amazing experience, though. I love that event. I love the energy that the horse racing community has and the passion that they have for the sport they love so much. I mean, we all really wondered how Medina Spirit would do, as well as Concert Tour, in the aftermath of the Bob Baffert controversy and the 21 picograms of betamethasone. I'm shocked I can still remember to say it that way.
That's one of the most impressive things that you've done in your career, is how quickly you learned to pronounce that word and have, I don't think you've messed it up once.
You're giving me too much credit. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but spent my entire weekend in Baltimore talking about it. So if I am mispronouncing it, at least I'm consistently mispronouncing it.
I think, though, your producer, Chris Kugler, would have corrected you, and she's like the horse racing czar.
She's a ninja, man. Yeah. She is the all-knowing when it comes to that industry and helping me navigate every single live shot and doing my best to do so. And she is such an invaluable resource in making sure that terminologies are right, that the kind of, I mean, there's a language in horse racing, just like there's a language in auto racing, just like there's a language in golf. And if you don't use that language, people, they notice. And so she's very adept at helping me navigate that and do it at least at a functional level. And again, we all expected one of those two Baffert horses, Medina Spirit or Concert Tour, to win the Preakness. We thought Concert Tour would be the one that would possibly and probably eliminate Medina Spirit from a Triple Crown opportunity. Well, it wasn't. It was Rombauer, which, I mean, I don't know a whole lot of people who had the six horse in their exacta box lineups. I had the whole damn field in an exacta box lineup except the six. So I just handed all my money away. And it was funny. I was hanging out with my new friends from the Hot Rod Charlie camp, from the Boat Racing LLC camp. I was hanging out with a couple of those guys, Dan and Patrick, at the Preakness. And they said, "Let me see your tickets." And I hand them one of my tickets. And the thing's got five or six horses on it. They just started laughing. They were like, "Dude, at least take some kind of chance." And then Rombauer wins the Preakness, and I just threw all my money away. Can't wait to see those guys race again next weekend, by the way, at the Belmont Stakes. Hot Rod Charlie will be in the race, and I will have money on him. They're amazing guys. I got a funny story for you, Patrick. So 2 years ago, when we were at the Preakness Stakes, I got invited into this fancy pants chalet they have in Enfield, and it's super big money. You got lieutenant governors, you got governors, you got the owner of the racetrack in there.
A lot of handshaking going on.
Just a lot of handshaking going on. And so I just assumed I'm allowed to go in there. So I go in there and I have Kugler with me. I have our camera crew with me, and we're just hanging out at a table having a really good time. Well, some other people wanted to come into the chalet, so I just walk over to the front door and bring them in. Well, all of a sudden, I could sense, I don't know about this, security seems like they're giving me the side eye right now. So I was like, well, just ignore it. You know, I feel like I belong here. I think I'm all
good. If you act like you belong in places, a lot of times people let you go.
Well, that did not work. So I go back over. I lead the people that wanted to come into the chalet over there to our table. And we're just sitting there having a great time and just watching the other races on the screen. Because behind the curtain for y'all, once we're done with SportsCenter in the morning and we do all of our live shots for SportsCenter and for Marty and McGee, I did the entire Marty and McGee show there at Preakness. We can't broadcast once NBC goes on air. They have an exclusive television broadcast window that disallows us from broadcasting during that window. So we have like this 6 or 7 hour window from our opportunity ending and the race ending. So you go around, you bet, you see people, you fellowship, you hang out, you party in some cases. And so we go into this chalet and after I got spotted by security and I could just sense the side eye. This girl, I don't even know what her role is or something. She's like an influencer in the fashion industry. And she came over and started talking to me about my suit. And of course, y'all know me and Alton Lane. I'm gonna talk about my suit all day. They're the best of the best. By the way, 2002 PGA champion Rich Beam pulled me aside at the putting green at the PGA Championship to ask me how he can get one. So there you go. Rory McIlroy told the whole free world, I'm the best dressed American he's ever seen. So anyway, I'm talking to this young lady who is a fashion influencer about my suit. And this other young lady comes over and asks me my name. And I said, my name's Marty Smith. And she goes, okay, Mr. Smith. And she leaves. And I'm like, we're busted. I knew it right there. So sit down at the table. And then this guy comes over and he wasn't no bullshit. I mean, he was like a security guy, like, you know, just Barney Fife and me right out of there. And so I said, oh, yes, sir. If I'm not allowed to be here, I'll leave. I didn't want anybody else at the table to have to deal with it. So I just walked. I said, yeah, man, no, if I'm disallowed from being here, I'll leave. No problem. So I walk out of the chalet there at Pimlico Racecourse. And I just made my way on over to there's an infield kind of broadcast room. I just went over there and sat down. And so one by one, everybody else at my table started to make their way out. And we just sat there and cut up and laughed about it and whatever. And then Marlon Humphrey walks over to me. You probably saw those pictures, Travis. I ran into my boy Hillis Tump.
Verily is your suit game trumped by somebody else. Yeah, Marlon said, I see your suit game. It's nice. Hold my beer. Take a look at everything.
Yeah, old Fruit Punch brought the heat. He's a great American, that guy. Just a great spirit, man. I met him when he was at Alabama. We've maintained a relationship since then, and he's he's a great pro. And so it was amazing to see him. It always is. Well, he was going to that chalet. And so we hung out for a while and he exchanged numbers with some of the guys from Hot Rod Charlie from Boat Racing LLC. And they hung out a little while, talked to little ponies, and off he went. And then the race ended and that was that. But it was very interesting to me to be in the chalet and being asked, for example, by the gentleman who runs the entire University of Maryland medical system for photographs and for time talking about college football. He's a Penn State guy. And et cetera, et cetera. And then being booted out of the place. It was an interesting dynamic, but I get it. If I did not have proper, I mean, we genuinely thought we had proper clearance. We did not, Travis. We did not. And so off we went and the Preakness ended and the Rombauer story is an absolutely unbelievable one. If you don't know that story, go look it up. We did a piece for Sports Center afterwards where the ownership, it's a couple, they were they had Ron Bauer up for sale. And the auction at which he was to be sold was delayed due to the COVID-19 pandemic. So they decided to keep him and to race him. And now he is a Triple Crown race winner.
Gonna be worth a lot more when they try to do any sales now.
That is affirmative. That is affirmative. Pretty awesome. Thrilled for those guys, and it was really fun to be there. Won't be at the Belmont Stakes this weekend because there's not a Triple Crown candidate. I will be at Ember Glow Resort with my family and seven other families, I think. Six other families, something, going camping. And so
now, are we talking camping? Like, what are we talking about
here? I don't know. I mean, I guess you would consider it glamping because there's all these, there's all the folks who own Ember Glow.
Is it what you went to last year?
Yes. They bought this massive plot of land out in far western North Carolina. And they bought all these Airstream units.
Old school, like stainless steel looking ones.
Right.
Right.
And they refurbished them. They permanently parked them on the grounds. And they built a deck on each one. There's a grill at each one. Just super cool idea. And there's a big pavilion where you can gather. There's massive fire pits. I'm going to take my mountain bike this time and see if I can sneak away and maybe get a pedal. We're doing that, and that'll be really fun this coming weekend. And I'm doing Marty and McGee from there, so y'all might get to see Captain Yenny cooking our breakfast on Saturday morning.
Yeah, can we get the eclipse? Yeah, the eclipse. Is he going to return?
The human eclipse will be there. Mr. Greg Morin, another one of my best friends. So I leave the Preakness and come home for one day, and then I drive to Kiawah Island for the PGA Championship coverage, which was a very unique experience for me. I had done the Masters for several years and whatnot, and I really enjoy covering golf. Now, this was a different experience because as part of the coverage at the PGA Championship, I was interviewing the participants live on TV, which I do not do at the Masters. Everybody was amazing to me. I mean, some of those guys didn't know me from Adam. Some of those guys never seen or heard of me. Fortunately for me, most of them are college football guys. And so they did know me from that side of the career, of the coverage life of mine. And I have pre-existing relationship with Dustin Johnson, with Brooks Koepka, with Rory McIlroy, and those guys, Tony Finau. And so they were extremely good to me. And there were some moments where it wasn't quite as seamless, and people were not as inclined to give us time. And that's another story for another time. It might end up in a book. I don't like calling people out. One of the coolest moments that I had, and I had a lot of cool, what a stunning place. The ocean course is just absolutely beautiful. Absolutely beautiful golf course. And on Friday, after the second round, I was standing at a board where Gene Wojciechowski and myself split duties interviewing the golfers as they exited the course following their rounds. And it just so happened that it happened to be my shift when Phil Mickelson came off the course. And he had had a fantastic second round to move into a tie for second place on the leaderboard as he exited the course. Well, as I was interviewing him live on television, he became the leader of the PGA Championship. And I am being told in my ear from the producer that, hey, Phil Mickelson is probably going to become the leader of the tournament. Stay with him. Ask him one more. Ask him another question. And then, ultimately, that's exactly what happened. One of his competitors double bogeyed the 17th. And I got to say to him live on television, sir, I have an update for you. You are the leader of the PGA Championship. And his comment back to me with a great smile was, well, if you tell me that on Sunday, it'll be a little better. And then we all got to see one of the most amazing things you'll ever see in sport. And I think it was a confluence of emotion. Not only was it this icon, Phil Mickelson is an icon. He's one of the most successful, accomplished, renowned, appreciated competitors in the history of his sport. He's considered an everyman. Like what people feel like they could sit at the end of the bar with him and have a cold one. And that's a very endearing trait for the consumer base, for guys like you and me, Travis, who, you know, would love the opportunity to sit at the end of the bar with Phil Mickelson or with a Jimmy Johnson or Dale Jr. or, you know, Tom Brady, and just talk life and have a cold beer. Mickelson's one of those kind of guys, Peyton Manning. And so he goes on to win this major and become the oldest golfer in the history of the sport to accomplish a major championship victory. As that type of personality that people are drawn to, in a moment when we are gathering again, post-COVID, as the world has begun to open back up and you see the throngs and you see the fans swarming the course behind and around Phil Mickelson and Brooks Koepka. And I know Brooks was pissed off in the aftermath, and he has a right to be. According to him, his knee, which we know is dinged up, took a couple shots.
Yeah, I think with him, had his knee been healthy, I don't think he would have been upset with it. I think it was basically, I've got this knee that's been, you know, reconstructed for me to be able to function, and it's still not there, right? You know, 100%. So that's where his unhappiness came from.
And he has a right to be that way.
Yes.
That just can't happen when you're in the throes of trying to win a major championship. The rarest heir. That would have been Brooks' fifth major championship had he closed.
Yeah, he was still he still had a shot. It was an outside shot at that moment, but it wasn't like he was out of a chance. Like, you know, if he could have had a miraculous shot, like he still had a chance at that point too.
The broader point though is fans that close to competitors in the middle of the arena. And I remember back to East Lake at the end of 2018 when Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy were walking down the 18th fairway, and it was absolute bedlam. And Rory looked at Tiger and said, "This is all yours, brother. I'm getting the hell out of here." And it is a coronation, which is exactly what it was for Phil. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing to witness. But there's a balance that needs to be struck for player safety, competitor safety, and whatnot. And so certainly that's being addressed, and Brooks made his point very bluntly, and we'll get to Brooks on TV. We'll discuss that in just a moment, but what a spectacular thing to see. Phil Mickelson winning the PGA Championship, his first major victory since 2013. And just such a, You could see it all over him. The appreciation. When you get older, guys, there's an appreciation for moments that you don't have when you're a younger person. because as a younger person, you just expect there to be more and more and more and more moments. Mark Martin used to say to me, after every single victory he had in NASCAR, he treated it like the last one because there might not be a next one. And they're so damn hard to win.
Well, that's the big thing is it's hard to win, period. You know, you have a piece that ran at the Masters and was running for the PGA Championship about just how damn hard it is for anybody to win a tournament. And when you add in your age, like you have to have a perfect weekend to win. And so, you know, that these are few and far to come by once you get up there.
Well, I will say this too. Last thing on the PGA Championship and Phil Mickelson and what it was an amazing event, and the PGA of America did a great job. Everybody at Kiowa did a phenomenal job. The energy on the island throughout the entire week was tremendous. I'm very proud of the work we did for ESPN. Every single person from Mike McQuaid, our boss, to I'll shout out Rebecca Preston, who is our logistics czar, who is the look.
I don't know how she does it.
I don't know how she does what she does. And I mean, it is getting all of the on-air people in the right places at the right times. And it is a miracle. I just don't know how she does it. I don't know how they do it.
I'll say this about Mike. He's got all the stuff that's going on. And that week, he's emailing me to help me get Scott Van Pelt set up to tape a podcast while he's down there. So he's managing that. And then in the meantime, he's also coordinating things with me so that we can get a podcast going. Like,
he's also producing a boxing match from the TV compound of a golf major.
He's unreal.
He is unbelievable. And I can't say enough what it means to me. I say it all the time. The belief that our bosses, my bosses, have in me is very humbling. I mean it. To be a part of McQuaid's team is badass.
I have a question for you. You were going to football games in the fall where at times there was basically nobody there. And so you've kind of seen the progression as things have started to open up. The Masters in November, we had nobody. Masters in April, there was a good amount, but not what it was. What was it like to be at an event where I'm assuming at times you were able to forget that COVID was even a thing?
It was fabulous. While you were there. It was fabulous. It felt almost normal. I mean, the Kentucky Derby felt really close. PGA Championship felt very normal because the proximity of the people wasn't the demand for all the social distancing. And I mean, I'm interviewing Rory McIlroy right beside him. Like, I got to be right beside the competitors again. And now granted, look, we took all the precautions we have been. I got COVID tested multiple times while I was there.
On top of being vaccinated.
On top of being double vaccinated and having had the damn virus. And so it just was awesome to embrace people again and hug people and just amazing. And like, even at Disney, I left the PGA Championship after a week and drove to Disney to meet my family for a week. And at Disney, we had to wear our masks in line, but they wove the lines outside instead of snaking them inside like they normally did. And so we wore our masks in line and we wore them on the rides, but out in the park, we didn't have to do that. And so that was awesome. Of course, you know, you post a photograph of your sweet little girl and all the Karens in the world are writing you saying to take your mask off your daughter. Well, hey, Dip, if we want to ride the ride, we have to abide by the rules, and that's the rules.
There's things that, you know, at times, yeah, we don't like wearing it, but guess what? If it's if it's worth my daughter having joy and going on some rides, well, then
they don't know.
Gonna wear the mask.
Like, they don't know. These kids, they've been wearing them at school. They've been wearing them. Like, what? Wait, we're not going down that rabbit hole.
How was Disney? Because that's all. It doesn't matter. COVID, not COVID. Disney is a monster. Now, luckily, your kids are of the age where you're not having to keep an eye on them every second, but it's still three kids, Disney, you know, what was that?
Absolute monster. I mean, absolute monster. I can't find the data right now. I can't find the data right now on my phone, but
I mean, you walked so many steps, the data probably just stopped.
It was more than 20,000 a day. So I was looking for the data on my iPhone there. I think here's my guesstimate without having it right in front of me. I'm going to guesstimate 75 to 85,000 steps and nearly, if not a full 40 miles walked in the parks over a 4-day experience. For example, Wednesday we did Magic Kingdom. We got there when it opened. We did a 9 to 2 o'clock or 2:30 stint, grabbed the monorail, went back to the hotel, crashed for 90 minutes, got back to the park at 4 and went full tilt till it closed at 9.
Oh, Lord.
And
that's got me tired right now.
You talk about gassed. I mean, then we got right up at dawn because we wanted to be at Epcot when it opened the next day. And we did so. And so we left Epcot in the afternoon, maybe 4 or 4:30-ish on Thursday. Lainey and I, the kids got back to the room. They were chilling, you know, watching their movies or texting with their friends or whatever they were doing. Lainey and I went to the pool and had 3 or 4 cold beers. And I felt like I'd just run Boston. I was so smoked.
Now, how do you are neurotic with your food. How was your diet at Disney?
It was great.
Were you able to maintain the things, or how are we doing?
Yeah. I mean, I did fine. So I would eat before I went every day. And then I did not eat once in the park themselves. Now I would nibble on Mickey bar. If my kids had a Mickey bar and it was melting all over the ground and I had to, you know, save some Mickey bar, I would do that. But, and I might have a, like, we packed bags, we packed waters. I carried, those huge Yeti water bottle things, yeah. Containers. We'd fill them up before we left the hotel, and I would carry them on my back, and we would fill them up in the park throughout the day. And Lainey had snacks in a throw bag of hers. So I would have like a Kind bar or two throughout the day, and then I'd have a good meal at night.
I have to. I actually sent a message first to Lainey and then to you. So I have to give you crap publicly. One of the days I texted you and I said, you're going to go coach an AAU basketball game. You had your Radford polo on and your khakis and you look like you look like you had the team and you guys were taking the day off to go to Disney.
I was ready to go, brother. I was ready to coach up the squad. I did have to emotionally coach up the squad, man. Disney can, you parents can relate to what I just was thinking there. So Disney was awesome though. We had an absolute blast. Did Marty and McGee from atop the Bay Lake Tower, which was just killer. I had Magic Kingdom and Space Mountain as my background. McGee was at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
That might be one of the best live shots you've ever had, only second to the human eclipse, probably.
Human eclipse was pretty good. Yep. Really fun. Just an amazing few weeks, man. And really grateful to have the experiences with my colleagues at the Preakness and at the PGA Championship, and then all the time I spent with my family and the time I'm going to get to spend with my family at Emberglow coming up here. But There's a couple of other things that I want to discuss. First of all, let's discuss Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau. So after the final round, Todd Lewis, who's a great person, we have the same agent. Todd is the golf reporter. He goes to at least 75% of the tournaments, and he reports for Golf Channel, as connected as anybody in the game. And he's interviewing Brooks Koepka after Brooks comes off the course. And meanwhile, Bryson DeChambeau is walking behind Brooks, talking to his caddy. Now, there was a whole bunch of click-clack going on with the spikes. Bryson was saying something out loud, and I don't know what – I still don't know
and
what
never,
made
and never
Brooks
got,
annoyed.
And never got out what it was and put it out there. This interview was going to be a live to tape, so it wasn't live on air. It was – Golf Channel was taping it, and then it was to be aired at a later date, later time or whatever.
Correct, and it got leaked on social media. And well, so
let's get, let's – rewind a little bit to what he what happened in the interview that why it then got leaked. He walks by and Brooks loses his train of thought. Yeah. He, you know, gasps and then says some things about it. Obviously, Golf Channel is not going to air that interview. They pause and they reset.
Todd even said it.
Yeah.
We're going to enjoy that in the TV compound. But and Brooks goes, I don't care if you do air it.
Well, so one thing I did find out recently is how it got leaked is somebody found the video on a website, Silo Media or something. But reportedly, Brooks had asked to be have the video sent to him because he wanted to share it with some friends. And so I'm wondering if it was uploaded on a website for him to grab and someone saw it on there and ran with it.
Well, that's an interesting twist.
That's what I read. I read the other day is that that's one of the reports out there. Whether or not it's true, I don't know.
Well, the overwhelming disdain that Brooks has for Bryson was made readily obvious right there. I mean, there was eye rolls, there was sighs, there was like, I can't stand that dude.
There was cussing.
And so then it became a social media thing back and forth. Now, here's my whole take on it. If those two can embrace their disdain for one another, they're going to make a lot of money because it makes peripheral fans who may or may not tune into the Dollar General Classic, whatever, John Deere Classic, tune in just to see what happens. It reminds me of Earnhardt Gordon in the 90s in NASCAR. Earnhardt Gordon in 90s NASCAR made everybody a ton of money. Those drivers went from staying in hotel rooms like everybody else to having multi-million dollar motorhomes in their own airplanes. And the reason is because those two were not only polar opposite personalities, they were also the two best drivers alive. Now, in golf, you're talking about not only polar opposite personalities, but two of the top, I don't know, this is probably a Scott Van Pelt question, but they're both top 10.
Yeah, they're up there.
They're a threat to win every single time they suit up.
It's Bryson is somebody that because of who he is and the driving of the ball, like people are always wanting to tune in to see him either succeed or fail.
That includes you and me. We sat at the 17th at the Masters just to watch him bomb it.
Yeah. We just wanted to see him crush a ball. And if these two can bottle this up and kind of keep it going and, you know, they took some playful jabs on Twitter and if they can, you know, keep this going and golf needs to find a way to keep this going because like you said, there is a lot of money to be made for them. And then the golfers around them, if you're paired with Bryson or Brooks, it's going to boost your you know.
For sure. It's really good for the game. It's really good for the game. Conflict sells, always has, always will. And it's not something, even though the Phil, and like Phil Tiger, when Phil and Tiger were going at each other, you knew it was very real. And this has more venom. Like this feel to me, again, this is a Scott Van Pelt question, but Tiger Phil was like a course centric. I want to beat your ass. I want to win everything. I don't want you to win. This Brooks Bryson thing to me feels personal.
There is at the core, the foundation, there is a legit, I don't like that person.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, look, again, all you got to do is watch that video. I mean, you watch that video. I was watching it going, whoa. And
I sent you the text and video and I think I just said, wow. Like I was stunned and to see it out there that for him to be that blunt about it.
It just doesn't surprise me though, man. It doesn't surprise like Bryce. Like so Brooks is one of those people. I've covered a lot of athletes and a lot of different types of personalities. I haven't met a ton who genuinely don't care what you think about them. I just haven't. A lot of people posture like they don't care, but they desperately care.
His give a damn is broken.
Brooks Koepka does not care what you think. And I think it's great for the game. I think it's awesome for the game. And so, if Bryson, I don't know Bryson the same way. I spent a little bit of time with him at the PGA, which I thoroughly enjoyed, just for the record. Really enjoyed kind of trying to climb inside his brain. And I asked him a question about, you know, what he is doing, how he is studying to all of the science that's involved in what he's doing to try to accentuate and improve his performance. And he started saying these words. I don't even know what any of them were. I can't do my daughter's sixth grade pre-algebra, much less quantum physics or whatever he's talking about. Ball densities and club rigidities. And I don't know what all he was talking about. But I love it for golf. And as someone who is infatuated with the tour right now, I am infatuated with the tour and the personalities and the people who play it and run it and all of that. It only adds intrigue to something that I'm really falling in love with. And so that's that. So we got home from Disney and my mailbox was overflowing, as you could imagine.
You do know that you can literally have your mail like held, right?
I do know that. I do know that. Lainey walks into the room here. I was booking a flight. And Lainey walks into the room and hands me one of those manila envelopes with the bubble wrap inside. And I look at it, and it is addressed to me, addressed to Martin Smith. And as Lainey is holding it, she is pointing at the return address on the envelope. The return address is East Leo Smith Road in Ashland, Missouri. My dad's name was Leo Smith. Okay? So I am super perplexed by this. Is someone messing with me? What are we doing? I open up the envelope. The envelope is a letter from Captain Christopher Jolly of the Missouri State Highway Patrol. Captain Jolly writes a letter in impeccably perfect handwriting, by the way, that in May of 2020, he received word that his father had died unexpectedly. And although he felt his dad had lived a full life to 80 years old, it did not matter. He was gone. He said he felt prepared for what was coming, but he was wrong, and the finality of the moment was excruciating for him. He said, having listened to this podcast for years and reading the book and the open, honest conversations about losing both my parents that I've had, one of his first thoughts the day his dad died was, now I know how Marty feels. And he said it helped him so much knowing that those feelings were not only his. He was not alone in the way that he felt. He also said that he appreciated so much our support on this podcast of law enforcement officials all over the country. I say it every single podcast. And he said he was so grateful for truly demonstrating kindness, effort, and passion in all that I do. Now, it gets weirder. Not only does Captain Jolly live on Leo Smith Road, his father died on May 22nd, which is my youngest's, Vivian's, birthday. He also just happened to send a couple of patches from the Missouri State Patrol to me in this package, one of which is a breast cancer awareness patch, which is the wretched disease that took my mama. And so all of this, when I read the letter, when I saw the message, when all of the dates and all of the nuance line up the way they do, I was just moved to tears. And I had chills all over me. And so to Captain Jolly, whom I will write a letter back, thank you for taking the time to share that with me. And I'm just completely floored. I showed it to my sister and we just kind of sat there and couldn't believe what we were looking at. But I say it every day. I say it all the time that kindness, effort, and passion are the pillars that I want to live by. I don't always succeed. Sometimes I get to a place where maybe I'm not the nicest. I get to a place where I don't have the right perspective on my blessings. But I'm trying. And I'll try until I die. So thank you, Captain Jolly, for sharing that with me. And I certainly hope he's okay with me sharing that with the world. I imagine he would be. Very humbling.
That's awesome. And just those, when you have those weird ties and you almost like look at like it's kind of like a message being sent to you.
No question. And just completely taken aback. I mean, when I saw the road, I was like, what? And sure enough, it's just really humbling. So thank you so much to Captain Jolly.
So
I don't even know what else to say about it.
Final thoughts, will make a transition. Yesterday, speaking of things feeling normal, it wasn't totally normal because Monaco was a week, you know, before, but we had the Indy 500 and then the 600 with NASCAR, and the Indy 500 couldn't have, you know, there was obviously I wanted Graham Rahal to win and I had bad luck, but 135,000 plus fans there to watch Helio Castroneves win his fourth. And then the scene afterwards, I felt like is what we needed.
Movie, man. The movie script.
And the broadcast, you could feel it, but you know, it doesn't have the same feel. It was Jeff Gluck posted a video when Elio ran to the fence and jumped on it, and how loud that crowd was amazing.
You have to understand what Elio Castroneves has given back to auto racing. It's given him everything. But I say it again, back to kindness, effort, and passion. Those are traits that Elio constantly projects. And never before has he projected that level of appreciation and humility and gratefulness that he did on Sunday afternoon at the Indianapolis 500. And he is now one of four to win four and etches his name in the absolute elite tip of the pantheon spear in open wheel racing in America. And it just couldn't happen to a better guy. Anytime I've ever been around him, he has that, like, that's his genuine attitude all the time. You know, when the camera's on, when the camera's off, it never mattered. He always has that smile. He's always grabbing you and just projecting that level of passion. And we are better for it. I mean, the sport, again, the sport and the fan base, we won yesterday with him. Because in this time, in Roger Penske's first run as the owner of the racetrack, and that's another thing. I mean, Roger Penske's the epitome of class. Elio won Indianapolis 500s under the Penske banner, and then he goes and wins at Mr. Penske's first experience as owner of that racetrack on the grandest stage, Memorial Day weekend, Indianapolis 500, to 105th running of the race. And so just a dream, absolute movie script dream, and congratulations to him and everybody involved in that race team who gave him that opportunity. It was a brilliant drive. I mean, he stayed out of trouble until that last run. Next to last run, really, he started coming on. And then in that last run, he played it perfectly.
I mean, in that last run, there was a lot of lap traffic, you know, for only having two cautions. That race yesterday was chock full of drama.
It was phenomenal. And so just thrilled for him and for us, it would have been amazing to be there, but I'm grateful for everybody involved in that sport, because it's a storyline that is an historic one. And would be no matter who won. But when you're talking about reaching that level, you know, you go from driving for Roger Penske to Meyer Shank, and this team that's put together, and you basically offer a master's class to young Alex Palou, also a Marty and McGee veteran, and join Foyt, Mears, and Unser on the four-time winner list. It's just to see him running along the fence, certainly climbing the fence, to see all those fans during his victory lap climbing the fence to celebrate him and everything that he's done for the sport. It was just beautiful.
And as you said, there's some events that are just bigger, you know, Masters, Derby, and Indy 500 is on that short list. And for a lot of people, don't realize that track, it's right next to a neighborhood. It's a stone's throw away from where people live everyday life. It's that race, and that track is a part of the foundation and the fabric of that area.
There's only one sporting institution that moves around, and that's the Super Bowl. American sporting institution. The other ones stay right where they are, and they race there, or they compete. They compete there every single year in the same place. That's what always separates the Masters. It's the only major that doesn't move around. The Kentucky Derby is always at Churchill Downs. The Indianapolis 500 is always at the Brickyard. And
Being a racer, I always throw the Daytona 500 in there because I think it's a national holiday too. Always is the Daytona International Speedway. And so just an awesome thing to witness. I mean, I my heart was pounding out of my chest and I was pumping my fist in the air, sitting on my couch. Pretty awesome.
It was awesome.
Well, thank y'all for hanging out. We appreciate so much your support of Marty Smith's America. Subscribe, rate, and review, please. It matters to Travis and me. And thank you all so much for sending commentary and letters. I see your DMs. It might take me a month and a half to see them, but I do see what you're saying. I'm so grateful that you're getting some sort of spiritual fulfillment out of this platform. We love doing it. And again, when you receive letters like I got from Captain Jolly, you're moved to a level of humility and whatnot that you can't, you're humbled, man. And I just appreciate everybody who invests in this. Thank you guys so much. Thank you to our law enforcement officials like Captain Jolly all over the country working every day to keep our community safe. And thank you to our first responders, our firemen, who work so hard to save lives every day, and especially today. We're taping this on Memorial Day. So grateful to the United States military here in the United States and all over the globe, sacrificing so much to keep us free, especially those who paid the ultimate sacrifice, who died fighting and working so that we might live in a free land. That's just, it's a blessing that we just don't think about every day because we just can go and do. And I'm so appreciative to be right here in the United States of America, the greatest country on earth. Thank you guys so much. Have an amazing week. We'll check in next time around. And I think we'll have a guest, Travis, right?
We're working on them.
Okay. Y'all be good. Enjoy your Memorial Day and have a great week. This is Marty Smith's America. We'll see you next time around.